Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, brothers and sisters, and welcome to TNJ Radio on another Wednesday evening here. We appreciate you joining us. I am T. Foster, joined by my brother Jay Wells. How you doing, man?
I'm good, bro. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I hope everyone is having a good week during this cold, cold winter. But I hope everyone is doing well.
Absolutely. It's been a tough winter for us out here. Well, a week for us out here in the Midwest. Had a little snowstorm, but nothing that we're not used to. So it's all good. We'll keep it pushing. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for tuning in. Like we said last week, the viewership, or rather listenership, has continued to grow, and we really appreciate the support. And, you know, we'll keep bringing you this solution-based radio that, you know, we feel the game is missing. And so with that being said, we'll go ahead and jump right into it. This week's program is Mind Over Matter, Mental Health in the Black Community. And this was something that we really wanted to bring to the table, because with all of the issues that our community faces, you can really trace it all back to mental health, whether it be a lack of or a lack of resources or extreme mental strength. And so there's everything that we do is linked to mental health. And so that's something that we really wanted to bring to the table on this evening. And I was just thinking earlier today about how historically Black folks have been demeaned and mentally degraded and talked down to and literally mentally destroyed to the point to where we thought so low of ourselves that we lost the ability in a lot of spaces to prosper, to be successful, to think highly of ourselves, to the point to where we could go out and make change in the world, and specifically in our own world. And that's something that has kept us stagnant throughout the years. And mental health is one of the things that is taboo in our community, where we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to talk about brothers and sisters having low self-esteem, having a high degree of self-hate. More importantly, why those things occur. And so that's something that we're going to explore tonight, you know, those topics, but also solutions in terms of how we can really get to the bottom of getting those things done in a practical sense. And with that being said, I really want to kind of open it up and let you jump in here, Wells. When you think about the current mental state of Black America, and that's a broad spectrum, but generally speaking, what comes to mind?
Resiliency. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. But the thing is, when it comes to resiliency, I wouldn't necessarily say it equates to mental strength. You know what I mean? We've, as a culture, as a people, we've been through so much. We've endured so much. But we've always had that. We've always been able to bounce back. But the thing is, with the hardships and the struggles, a lot of us have developed a sense of that kind of I don't care mentality. Like a lot of Black people and a lot of people in general, it's like as things go wrong, things continuously happen, people kind of get discouraged. But I will say that due to recent events, due to things like the Mike Brown situation, Eric Garner situation, you've seen a lot of brothers and sisters really feel that urge to step up, like, hey, we need to take control of our community, of our situation. And that has been a great sign to see. But at the same time, I think when people start getting that feeling like, hey, man, nothing is changing, they kind of just fall back into the norm. And it takes that mental strength to continue to keep pushing. Just because something didn't work this time, hey, let's try something new. A lot of us get that really quick to get that I don't care mentality. And it's like I really despise hearing people talk about, like, oh, man, I don't care, whatever. You know, it's like you can't function that way. You can't function at a high level that way. It's like you can't lose the sense of whatever the urge or whatever it is that makes you go and commit to something, want to do something. We tend to give in really quickly in that regard. And So it's like right now, people are fired up. They've been motivated, and that's something that I love to see. And I just hope it doesn't turn to a situation where it's a matter of time where people just stop caring again. And you kind of felt that way, like after like the Trayvon Martin situation, people were so outraged. People were like internet outraged. You know, they cared on the web, but what were you doing in your community to kind of help further that? You know, you weren't taking that next step. And people kind of get to that mindset where they believe, oh, man, I've tried this, and I just give up now, you know? And I think a lot of that comes from the lack of opportunities within our community, the restrictions that a lot of us have within our communities from just not having the means to do things. And so there's a lot of factors that kind of impact brothers and sisters in that regard. It's like a lot of people, they wake up and they start feeling kind of hopeless because of their surroundings. You don't have the nice things you see on TV, and only thing you have are like liquor stores and just like bad people around you. And people allow that to kind of get them set in a mentality where they start feeling like things are okay, but they really aren't good things to have around you. And so we kind of get stuck into that mentality.
So there was a 2011 study done by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and it identified race and discrimination against Black folks in particular as a contributing factor to negative physical and mental health outcomes to our people. And most importantly, it noted that racism and discrimination also contributes to post-traumatic stress syndrome in Black communities. Also, there was a study, the outcome of the study came in 2012, and when I was looking over this, it was really interesting, but the study itself was conducted between 1996 and 2010, so a pretty substantial time frame where a Dr. Alex Pietras out of Albany State University conducted a study of over 18,000 African Americans and over 66 individual studies that comprised this one research project. And his findings also came to the conclusion that racism in America was the cause of a lot of the conditions, mental conditions facing Black folks, a lot of the mental health issues facing Black folks in America. And I found that really, really interesting and compelling. But more importantly, he pointed to that he said that his findings show that it led to depression, anxiety, paranoia, anger management, and inability to hold interpersonal relationships with other people as a result of racism and discrimination against Black folks. And that study was conducted over a 14-year span. And the reason I say that and the reason I bring that up is because a lot of the mental health issues in our community are stemming from the conditions in which we live, which are systematically constructed via white supremacy and its after effects. And so these systems that are in place have damaged our psyche to the point that we have fallen into these symptoms that I kind of just laid out. And that's really where a lot of this is coming from. And I just find that extremely fascinating that, you know, we always look at, okay, let's look at the symptom instead of focusing on the cause. And I think in this instance, it's a lot of systematic things going on that are contributing to our mental breakdown and our demise and a lot of mental situations that we could be really headed off at the path if we look at the cause as opposed to the symptoms, which are, you know, would be the depression and the anxiety and all of those things. And there's a really cool book that I always try and get people to read, but nobody has taken me up on it that I know of so far. But it's called The Warmth of Other Suns, and it's about the Great Migration from black folks that came up from Mississippi after the Civil War, and then they started to migrate up to Chicago. And it talks about how black folks were purposefully, how the South Side of Chicago was purposefully constructed for black people, and how our people were denied housing, jobs, and everything, health care, and all of those things to keep them mentally shackled, mentally broken down, so that they lost hope. And a lot of our folks turned to violence and had nervous breakdowns. And really, that was where the modern degradation of our communities started. And so you really have to trace these mental, these mental situations back to where they came from. And it really starts from situations like that.
Yeah, and when you think about those situations, man, and you think about the regular distress that a lot of people just kind of encounter, witnessing, like for people to kind of witness friends and family members die and those kind of things, it takes a toll on you, especially within the inner city where you don't have the resources that are available to you for treatment. And there was an article on mentalhealthamerica.net, and they kind of talked about the lack of access that minorities have to mental health professionals. Like, we don't have psychiatrists readily available. They aren't always provided by, like, Medicare or your smaller insurance claims. And a lot of people, they just can't afford it. And it was in the study, they kind of touched on only 8.7% of adult blacks versus 16% of adult whites receive treatment for mental health concerns. And that's twice as many people from adult whites that are actually able to have access to a professional psychiatrist and things like that. So you think about that number, these are for adults. Can you imagine that as a kid? And you're a child, you have drug dealers outside, you hear gunshots, you hear all those things. These things take a toll on you. And the natural distress that comes with it that anyone would kind of experience, anyone would want to feel some kind of comfort or some safe haven. And anyone would want that. But when that's not available to you, a lot of that gets bottled up. And that kind of leads into a lot of the things that kind of trigger the mentality where people just give up. They just try to deal with it instead of trying to seek help. And a lot of that has to do with the attitudes that come with the black culture. It's like a lot of people are just embarrassed, or they're ashamed, or they're afraid of someone putting them down for wanting to seek help. Because we always have that mentality, like, oh man, that's not a black problem, that's a white problem, man. Oh, bro, you weak, you don't want to do that. And we get to the point where we're ashamed to actually seek help, and we get to the point where it just turns into like a joke, where your family members are talking about you, they're making you feel worse about it, and you just get to the point where I just don't want to deal with it. I don't want help. Instead of actually seeking treatment for something that has become a real issue for you.
Yeah, I think that you make some really valid points there. And, the thing of the root of all of this, in my mind, for our people in particular, comes down to poverty. Poverty equals mental anguish in most instances. Now, are there other groups that have mental issues because they, have money and have resources? Absolutely. But for our people in particular, I think that the lack of resources is where all of this starts. And in 2012, and there's obviously, the poverty rate fluctuates, but in 2012, the poverty rate for black folks in America was 28.1%. So essentially 28% the poverty rate. Now, that's an increase of 25% from what it was in 2005. So over, over a 7-year span, we saw a 25% increase in the poverty rate. You see what I'm saying? So our our poverty rate continues to expand and expand, but there's no resources being pushed into our community to help people mentally deal with the things that are going on around them. And then it's so taboo to talk about that you're depressed, or to actually admit that you're depressed, or to actually admit that you have any type of real mental issue, because what's pushed in our community is to be strong, to never show weakness, to never show any sense of vulnerability, because if you do, then you become the prey. And one of the things that I found really intriguing was that the poverty rate for Black families in America is 24%, but the poverty rate for all other races, all other families in America, you know, other races combined, is only 11%. And so you can see how the gap is just absolutely tremendous. And that data comes from the U.S. Census, the last U.S. Census that we had released. So, I mean, the gap is staggering, but we can see that this exists, but there's no resources being pumped into the community that we can actually use. And I tell people all the time, and, you know, I might get banged on for saying this, but our biggest problem as a culture has nothing to do with anything, but it's all mental. It's all, we are the most depressed group of people on the face of the earth, in my opinion, due to our conditions systematically imposed upon us. We have so much built up against us, so much pit up against us, and so much to get to dig out of, that by the time you dig out of it, a lot of the times you don't even have any fight left in you mentally to move forward. And so I think that that's something that we need to start looking at. We know what's going on, but why are we not really trying to have dialogue that says, look, mental health is a really huge issue in the Black community and we should start addressing it?
And again, that goes back to, like, you're right. And it's like, I know for me, I always say, man, that through the situations that we've been put through, we need to go back and reflect on us. It all starts with us. We need to, because again, we can't always create these environments, but we have to seek and search for these environments where we can talk, where we can actually speak to one another. And there's more people, a lot of people may feel like, oh, it's just me going through this, but there's more people out there that will agree with you and are willing to listen to you than you would ever imagine. And that's something that I know personally, it took me years to even kind of recognize that, hey, man, there's more people dealing with this than you think. And because, again, like you said, we're all kind of pent into that corner where we start feeling like, hey, man, I don't want to look weak, or I don't want to talk about this. Oh, man, you acting emo or something. But no, it's okay just to let things out and actually talk to people. Because, again, more often than not, you're going to find that a lot of people are going through a similar situation, or they can just relate to you. Because when we're holding these things in and with the images that are portrayed, it just kind of put people to the point where they just kind of they start hating themselves, they just don't like the way they look, or it can be anything. And it kind of goes back to the whole self-hate thing, where people just start finding reasons to kind of blame themselves instead of just realizing, hey, something is wrong, but I can address it without, and it's not my fault, you know? And a lot of people just start feeling as if, oh, man, this is just like the worst situation ever, when we really just need to learn how to address things directly instead of just avoiding it and putting things on the back burner. And when it comes to the family environment, a lot of people, especially in the Black culture, it's like our families can be so dismissive, or they can kind of, instead of supporting you, they can kind of talk down to you, and it kind of turns people off from wanting to share.
Yeah, but one thing that I will offer though is that there's, when you mentioned the kind of being able to talk to people, you know, and talk to each other about what's going on with you. One thing that I will offer in that realm is that we've been systematically taught to distrust each other. And so what happens is you feel that you can't trust anybody enough to reveal what's going on with you, right? And so you wind up bottling it up and holding on to it, as opposed to feeling like you have outlets within your family or within your community where you can go, even a pastor or a church member or something like that. We're so conditioned to think that this person is going to judge me, this person is going to look down on me. So see how these systems start to intersect and connect with one another, because now you don't trust your brother or your sister, not literal, but whoever that person might be. So you don't ever get that off of your chest because of that. And so you continue to deal with whatever it is that you deal with, that you're dealing with on a personal level, as opposed to having outlets for it. And I think that's critical that we also recognize that as a part of this.
Definitely. And when you think about that, man, just identifying positive outlets and finding ways to kind of just find that sense of hope. Because a lot of people, like you said, they kind of get to the point where they feel hopeless, like there's nowhere for me to turn, or they feel like there's judgment around the corner. And until we're able to kind of rebuild and develop a sense of confidence where we feel comfortable sharing with each other and sharing with one another, that's going to continue to be a struggle. But that's why I know for me and to anyone who knows me, I kind of get to the, hey, man, it's a safe space kind of thing. You know, you want people to feel like there's a safe space when they talk to you, and you want to create environments where people are comfortable with you, and that kind of goes back to that whole, hey, I want to love and support my brother or my sister no matter what. You know, you have to learn how to love people for who they are and not necessarily judging every decision and things of that nature, and that'll really kind of help in the long term as far as helping people feel comfortable discussing mental issues. And because a lot of people, a lot of things just go undiagnosed, and people just don't know what's going on. And they really need that professional guidance, that professional help that isn't always available, but it doesn't hurt to go look for it.
Right. And I would agree. And I think that, you know, in particular for Black folks that enter the professional ranks and get out of their circumstance, you know, they lead a hood and, you know, get out here and get in corporate America and all that good stuff. I think it's even a different of mental stress and a different situation, because I think about myself and I think about how I work with virtually all white people. Virtually all of my interactions are with white people. And so when I talk about my upbringing with them, that's stressful for me, because I don't want to tell them my true story, because there's no room for me, as I talked earlier, to show weakness in front of these people. You get what I'm saying? I don't have the capacity within myself to say, okay, I'm going to tell them the real life story about me and my family, and so that they're going to feel sorry for me, and that may affect the way they view me and the way that I can do my job. And so I think that plays, I mean, that's another level of, you know, mental health and things that we need to get over, because, for example, I didn't grow up with my mother and father. My family structure was completely broken. I grew up in, you know, 17 different homes in 17 years. So with that being said, if a coworker asks me, well, tell me about your family, well, what do you want me to tell you, you see? So the situation instantly becomes awkward and stressful, and then you have to figure out some way to explain this to this situation to complete strangers without it being awkward and without them feeling sorry for you, because that's the exact opposite of what you want, is to be another Black person that this white person is feeling sorry for because of another hood story. And so it's a weird space that you occupy mentally when it comes to that.
And again, I couldn't agree more, man, because when you think about it, no one wants to turn into another Blind Side situation where there's some random white person trying to take care of a black person and things like that. No one wants to be vulnerable in that way. And that's something that it's real, you know, that's a real fear. And that's something that a lot of people go out of their way to avoid. But at the same time, you never want to create a situation where people feel like they're just left alone and out in the cold. And so no matter what the situation is, we want to try to create environments within our culture where people aren't shut down and they're not cut off and they feel alienated from help.
I agree. I agree 100% with that. Well, we have a few minutes here, Wells, so we can jump into our solutions if you don't mind. What do you have, man? What would you offer in terms of a couple solutions that we could institute practically now to help out with the mental health conditions of our brothers and sisters in the black community?
Again, I always want to focus on starting with us first and starting with things that we can do on the one-on-one level as a culture. And I really think if we just learn how to open our minds, just make ourselves available, there's times where you can see someone going through it. When you truly know someone, whether it's a friend or a family member, you see them struggling. They don't need to say anything. And when you know someone's actions, you know how they carry themselves, you witness these things, you need to speak to them. Just make yourself available. They may not talk initially. They may even be upset with you initially. But make yourself available. Don't be afraid to be shut down, and don't be afraid to be told no. But as long as you're available to you, make yourself available to them, sooner or later they will talk. And if that does not work, please just keep reaching out and try to talk to them. There's free mental health services available in every community, whether it's in the inner city. I've seen things in a wide range of cities on the web. But if you go to mentalhealthcounseling.com, there's a ton of different numbers that people can call, because a lot of times just having someone on the line where you can just vent goes a long way.
Yeah, I agree. I would agree 100% with that. Having that outlet is key. In terms of solutions on my behalf, I would offer we all have to be willing to be vulnerable in these instances. And so I would say be willing to be vulnerable. And that means if you're willing to be vulnerable, then that means that you're willing to share your mental anguish or any situation that you're going through with a family member or a friend or a trusted individual. And if you're showing that vulnerability, then that means that a person that might be going through something is willing to share with you. And I believe that is the true start, because if you are approachable, then people will feel that they can come to you to get things off of their chest and get moving in a positive direction. And without that vulnerability, you can't get the help that you really deserve, nor will the person that needs the help get the help that they really deserve. Also, I would just say to seek out allies. So whether it be local resources, kind of similar to what you just talked about, whether it be a Department of Human Services, a caseworker, anything along those lines, seek out individuals that have the resources or are connected to resources that can point you in the right direction to getting the help that you need, or getting your family member or friend the help that they need, because we know that if your mind isn't right, everything else in your world isn't going to be right. Any last words, Wells, before we get out of here?
Yeah, I just want to tell everyone, man, never feel like your plate is too heavy. Be your brother's keeper. You are your sister's keeper. Take care of each other and uplift one another. That's up to us. It's our job to take care of each other and protect each other. That's all I got.
I agree 100%. Always be there for each other. In these instances, times are tough, but always be willing to be vulnerable and always be willing to share. Take care. We appreciate you listening to TNJ Radio. We'll be right here next week at 6:30 p.m. Take care, my brothers and sisters. God is love.